Good morning, Oregon, and thank you for once again loading me down and queuing me up. Finn J.D. John here, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Every weekday, this podcast brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the Roaring Twenties murder mystery that was solved by both a cop's diligence and by a dying man's marksmanship. I'm talking about the railroad murder. It's a bit of a detective story. This story was first published on May 6th, 2012, under the headline Roaring Twenties Murder Mystery Solved by Cop's Diligence. Here we go. The sun had just gone down on a warm early summer night, and the twilight was in the final stages of fading away when Union Pacific Railroad special agents Buck Phillips and H.G. Schneider stepped into the railroad yard to make the rounds. There had been some issues in the rail yard. A gang of thieves had been systematically pillaging the railroad that year. Their M.O. was a simple one and evidently pretty effective. They'd sneak aboard an outbound boxcar full of cigarettes and, while the train was en route, start chucking boxes of smokes out the door. Other members of the gang would come along afterwards and retrieve them. They were clearly doing this at night because the following day railroad agents would usually find a case or two that they'd missed, and this had been going on for 3 months. So, Phillips and Schneider weren't just making the rounds the night of June 14th, 1921. They were looking for somebody, and they had to have been a little nervous about what might happen when they found him. The two of them walked along the train, one on each side, flashlights in hand, revolver holsters unsnapped, ready to draw. Then Phillips saw a dim outline bundled up on a flat car loaded with machinery, a man riding the rails. Technically, this was illegal, and the two agents, bulls, were supposed to kick him off. But as a practical matter, Phillips and Schneider didn't much care about rail riders as long as they weren't causing any trouble. "Where are you going?" Phillips asked him. "Heading for Baker, Chief," the grizzled Bindle Stiff said, adding that he was going to Eastern Oregon for the hay harvest. Phillips nodded and moved on. This would turn out to be a mistake. If he'd paused a moment and asked another question or two, the traveler might have told him that a couple tough-looking characters had just passed by just moments before the two bulls arrived, moving in the same direction up the train. The agents moved on, methodically working their way up the side of the train. A few cars later, Phillips saw what he was looking for, an open boxcar door. Now, in 1921, on the Union Pacific line to Troutdale, boxcars did not roll around with their doors open. They were full of freight, and they were sealed shut. If that boxcar door was open, it was because somebody had opened it. Phillips pulled his revolver out and brought his flashlight up. "Come on out of there," he barked. There was silence for a moment. Then the inside of the boxcar lit up with four bright, fiery flashes as the sound of pistol shots split the night. Three 38 caliber bullets lanced into Phillips, one in the upper arm, one in his thigh, and a third in the lower chest. He crumpled to the ground. Then two men jumped out of the boxcar and ran. Schneider scrambled under the boxcar, and once on the other side got up and emptied his own 38 special after the fleeing shadowy forms. Phillips had managed to get three shots of his own off before losing consciousness. He never regained it. 2 hours later in the hospital, Phillips died. The next morning, Portland Police Detective John Galtz was on the scene, and police and railroad agents searched the area carefully. They didn't find much, but they soon realized that one of the bull's pistol shots had hit one of the bad guys. There was a substantial blood trail leading away from the train. Galtz's investigation led through several dead ends over the next few days, but the publicity the case had generated was helping quite a bit. One key breakthrough happened when a truck driver reported that he'd been hired to move some large mysterious boxes fairly frequently from the Davis Hotel, located at 123.5 Russell Street in Albina, to a nearby grocery store. It seemed kind of weird to be moving freight through a hotel like that. Then an anonymous tipster called and suggested that Galtz might want to talk to a man named Dan Casey, who might be staying at, you guessed it, the Davis Hotel. Goltz decided he ought to go take a look. When police arrived at the hotel, the owner, John Burns, was friendly and helpful. And loud.
Ain't nobody here by that name, he boomed. I haven't seen him since Wednesday.
Then a woman walked out of one of the rooms. Goltz asked her straight out, where's Casey?
I haven't seen Dan for a week, the woman boomed in reply.
Meanwhile, Mr. Burns was slowly unlocking doors in the hallway, making sure the locks made plenty of rattling noises.
I told you Casey wasn't here, he bellowed cheerfully. But seeing as how you are bulls, I suppose I'll have to show you around.
In the first room, the detectives found a black doctor's bag full of bandages. And in the second room, a basket full of bloody gauze. There was also a loaded .38 special with dried blood all over it and a box of blasting caps. The trail seemed to be hotting right up all of a sudden. And yet, half an hour or so later, Goltz and his men were getting ready to leave. They had not found their man, and they had found no further sign of him. Then, like the cocky suspect on an old episode of Columbo, Burns now started laughing at them.
You see, copper, he jeered, I wasn't lying to you. Casey ain't here.
That's when Goltz realized there was one more room they hadn't searched, the one the really loud woman had emerged from earlier. When they walked into that room and started searching, one of the detectives gave a sudden yell.
Look out, he cried, there's somebody under that bed.
At the same time, a long arm snaked out from under the bed and dove under the pillow, then emerged, gripping a big revolver.
Drop that gun, shouted Goltz, getting his own out and pointing it at the figure under the bed.
It was indeed Dan Casey, and he was promptly arrested and given medical attention for not one but two gunshot wounds, both from the same bullet, which had gone through his forearm and lodged in his chest. Clearly, it was one of Phillips' dying shots fired at him as he was exiting the boxcar, since all of Schneider's shots had been from the back. Ballistics tests done on the bloody revolver proved that it had been the one used to kill Phillips, and the Baker-bound bindle stiff identified Casey out of a lineup. A jury soon made it official and sentenced him to hang. 2 years later, at the Oregon State Penitentiary, it was done. Well, that's it for today's episode. If you're listening for the first time and want more information about Offbeat Oregon, you can get everything at our central website. That's at offbeatoregon.com. There you'll find about 175 columns going back to 2008 when I first started writing these, plus links to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and to the Facebook page and Twitter feed if you'd like to join the conversation online. You'll even find a link to the Amazon page for my book, Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, which just came out last month. The website is also where you'll find the full citations of stories sources for this story. Sources for today's episode include Stuart Holbrook and back issues of the Portland Morning Oregonian. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band, written by Carmen Ficarra. Coming to Corvallis, drop me a line and let's grab a cup of coffee. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. Well, that's it for today, so thanks for listening, and have a great day.